breaker of banksters right here, Ben.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Ben Cochran, how are you doing, my brother, on this Saturday morning?
Sean, I'm so excited to be here as always. I always get that big energy before your show. Part of it's your awesome music you got in there, but just knowing that I can get out here and talk to your audience a little bit about some financial. I know it's third dimension, pretty mundane compared to some of the topics you cover, but it does affect us, so I'm always really pumped to be here.
Well, it's important, and you come in right there from the belly of the beast, so to speak, out in Virginia, near Washington, D.C., and the Fed. So you got your finger right on the pulse of what's going on. That's why it's always a pleasure to have you here, Ben.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Hey, first of all, let's get out of the way here real quick. Where can people find your work?
Awesome. Easiest place to go to blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. You can find all my social media. I have a weekly show, the Patriot Power Hour. I do little special features here and there. And especially when the economic crisis hits full force, I'll be giving probably daily updates there.
Awesome. Awesome. Check it out, everybody. Ben and I go way back. We were on Blog Talk Radio 5 years ago or so on the Freedomizer Radio Network. So it's been a long time. A lot's happened since then, boy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that might be a good segue into some news breaking today. National debt is up to $23 trillion. So even though it seems like 5 years ago, what could have happened? Guess what? We were at 17, 18 trillion. We've already gone up 5+ trillion in 5 years. So that's what's going on in the background.
What's causing that? I mean, where's the money going, Ben?
So, oh man, I could talk about that for hours and hours, and that's what I do on my radio station. But long story short, we're just fiscally irresponsible. On one hand, we have to come to terms with the fact we're spending more than $1 trillion that compared to what we take in. We take in about $3.5 trillion, and we spend $4.5 trillion. That's just at the national level. That's more than 5% of GDP. Think of it, this is just common sense. Let's break it down. If you were making 50 grand a year and you were adding $2,500, $3,000, $5,000 to your credit card balance every single year, compounded over and over, would you be able to survive?
No, sounds like my current budget.
Well, that's kind of the other issue. This is just the government bankrupt. So we go to the local level, we go to Medicare, we go to Social Security, we go to the corporations, the Apples of the world, especially these tech companies, but a lot of the startups and even, you know, old stalwarts like General Electric, super leveraged. They've been buying back their stock, artificially pumping that stock market so the top of the top get that money. And guess what? They're not going to be holding the bag. So they will be selling before everyone else. I'm not sure. I don't make predictions or make those calls per se, but we're seeing some tremors that may say that collapse may be coming soon.
Yeah, I foresee another bubble bursting here in the real estate market within the next couple of years. I'll actually step out on a limb and make that prediction right here. I see it coming again. And here's a note to all of you kids out there, your younger generations, don't use the government spending program as a role model for your own life. You cannot do that. You will drown in debt. And not only, I mean, you say $23 trillion, that's just short term. When we look out 20 years or so, it's more in the $75 trillion range.
So I'm not going to keep reading off stats because that doesn't make for great radio. But simply, if you guys want to follow along at home, go to usdebtclock.org. I don't have any affiliation with this site. It's just the best I've ever found. usdebtclock.org has tons and tons of metrics. And, you know, I think the most telling of it all comes that, you know, per taxpayer, we owe, and these are all those unfunded liabilities included, each taxpayer we owe at least $383,000. I don't know about you, but that's a I'm not going to be able to pay that bill by any means, and a lot of people won't either. But I say taxpayers specifically because guess what? The transfer payments, whether it's Social Security and Medicare, as I already talked about, but also food stamps, Section 8 housing, all these add up and are absolutely all-time records. So is the military budget, by the way, so we can't forget that. You know, at some point, we're going to have to pull back, and it's either going to be because of a financial collapse or maybe we can make some smart decisions and try to pare it back. But I really think at this point it's too late.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's getting to the point where it's not a matter of if, but when.
Exactly. And you know, I want to bring up the concept that, you know, financial nerds out there certainly know Paul Krugman. He's a columnist at the New York Times. He even got a Nobel Peace Prize. His big thing, and kind of those Keynesians, they say that it's okay that we have all this debt. Debt is just money that we pay to ourselves. Like, we owe ourselves in the future. It's okay. We'll pay it back. Well, one big part of this, look, I think 20-30% of the national debt is owned by foreigners. Obviously, a huge amount by China, but many other countries own that, number one. Number two, I like to just look at the fact that the bigger the government, the more opportunities for corruption. And the more debt, the bigger the government. So if you're looking from a liberty and freedom point of view, debt is toxic to your liberty as well, not just, you know, the taxes and the financial aspect.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think you're nailing it right there. So what else is going on, man? What do you see going on in the world stadium?
So, well, I wanted to actually keep it here. I was going to
go ahead. You roll with it, man.
Okay, sorry. Because the whole world is just such a quagmire. I'm just like, oh my gosh, let's focus at home on this episode, I guess, is my theme. Sorry for hijacking it. But you mentioned, not you, but the newsman before your show talked about the striking teachers in Chicago. And this is just kind of that final step I wanted to take with all this debt. Look, these people are striking and complaining. Maybe they have some legitimate reasons, but guess what? They haven't even seen the half of it. They haven't even seen 5% of it. They think they're still getting their pension in full. They're not even going to get 50% of their pension. Those that are, let's say, 50 years old, they're not even going to get 50% of their pension that's promised to them in places like Chicago and California. What's going to happen to these folks? I mean, what about the children? I mean, maybe you could say that's good. They're not getting publicly indoctrinated in the Chicago system while they're on strike. But I'm just saying, you know, this is real. The real life effect of this debt is not just imaginary. The banksters have kind of turned it into this ether zone that doesn't really affect everybody. But when you got to pay the piper, guess what? Teachers aren't going to be getting paid. Are they going to be teaching children? Firefighters, you know, it's going to be a real effect. And the government, even though we talk trash about it all the time, right, it does have important tasks to perform. And if those people don't get their pension or have major layoffs, it's going to make a big difference.
It is going to make a big difference. I know California state employees over there, they're facing big pension cuts. When in fact they do retire, they were promised a heck of a lot of money, and it's all getting wiped out going into the debt for the state because California's bankrupt, as is the nation.
And this is, you know, I really focus on interest rates all the time, and they sound boring, but they're so important. First and foremost, these pension funds, the only way they can take money in and pay out more in the future is if they make a profit. And that when they put their actuary tables together and their entire business model, it's supposing a 3, 4, 5, 6% interest rate on safe assets like a treasury. But we don't get that type of return anymore. We get 2% if you're lucky, and that's in America. If you go worldwide, they have negative interest rates on their sovereign debt. So what's happening? They're not making, you know, they're getting deeper into a hole, first off, because they're not making income. But just as bad, probably perhaps even worse, they're taking much bigger risks to try to close that gap with junk bonds and overinvesting in equities and startups and whatnot. And that's just priming these pensions and really all the entire market. But I'm focusing pensions here because that's where it's going to hit a lot of people, including 401k, of course. They're super over leveraged. They're not making that interest rate because the banksters have had to lower these interest rates to keep their scheme going.
And what's going to happen? I mean, years ago, it was pretty easy to save for your retirement. I mean, when you look at the rule of compounding interest, if you were making 8 or 9% on your money, every 8 years or so, your money compounded itself. So it was pretty easy to take some small change and turn it into a large fortune by the end of your working career. But nobody's getting those types of interest rates anymore. It's very difficult to save money there. Your best bet is the real estate market, but that's getting, at this point, it's being manipulated as well. They crash that thing every 8 to 10 years.
Absolutely. And I will be, fully admit, maybe I've been a curmudgeon or a little too conservative the last 5 years. I could have made a lot more money, in my portfolio, so to speak, if I had leveraged into the stock market. Part of the reason I don't is for moral reasons. But also, if you want to, it's too late. You've missed the re-inflation of the bubble. It's way too late if you're trying to buy real estate or get into the stock market at this point, in my opinion.
Right. And that's sad because, I mean, a lot of the the baby boomers made a lot of money there, and that's how they did fairly well. But the Gen Xers, we're finding it much more difficult to make any money off of our money. That's very difficult to do.
And then millennials like myself are really in trouble. Look, I guess for the younger generation, a little bit of solace is folks are retiring, so they're going to open up some jobs. It's kind of grim to say, but the younger generation will be kind of helped out with, estates and inheritance passed down. And there's a lot fewer of, Gen Z and millennials, let's say, than there are baby boomers. So, even in Japan, this is actually the opposite effect. Their real estate is crashing because they don't have any young folks to purchase the homes. So that's kind of a double-edged sword, of course, but we'll see if the assets even last another 20 or 30 years. But there's always a time to buy. It's just who's going to have the liquidity. And it's almost always the banksters who buy it for 5 cents on the dollar, right?
Mm-hmm. Are there any IPOs that are coming up and that you can foresee that would be good in putting your money into them?
That's actually a great question. And it's been blasted all over CNBC and whatnot because it was a huge blow up. But there's many others similar. WeWork. Have you ever heard of the company WeWork?
Mm-mm.
So they essentially are trying to be the middleman between more middlemen for setting up small kind of flexible leasing for commercial spaces. And this is really popular in DC area. Maybe that's why I know all about it. They got a lot here. They have a lot in London, New York, San Francisco, where essentially this company, think of it like an Airbnb of offices. That's essentially what it is. And I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but they were preparing for the biggest IPO of the year. This is just a few weeks ago. You can certainly go look this up, get the exact numbers. But it was underwritten by JP Morgan and a consortium of the banksters, right? And they were pushing this a certain level. I'm just going to use kind of not the exact numbers, but let's say they were going to put the IPO at $50. Well, things started to turn awry very quickly. Numbers were looking bad. People started to figure out, hey, this is actually a scam. They're losing a massive amount of money. They don't have a plan to fix it. And look, that IPO price dropped from a $50 to a $40 to a $35 a share, and then they just canceled the entire initial public offering. Because this is supposed to be the blockbuster of the year, maybe even one of the biggest of the decade. And it totally fell on its face. It's destroyed the IPO market for all intents and purposes. Companies aren't really even the IPO is kind of frozen now because people are looking at each other like, oh my gosh. Is this all a fraud? Does the emperor have no clothes on? Are all these business models and startups fake? So I personally would avoid them at this point.
I would too. It seems that the whole market has been so manipulated and corrupted at the highest levels. And obviously there's a big red flag there when JP Morgan is involved in an IPO. Certainly they're some of the biggest crooks in the market.
Yeah, and they're always going to be involved in those type of IPOs, at least under this current system, right? But what's really shady is for a fact, they're the underwriters. They know every single detail. They were trying to sell this again for kind of my imaginary price. $50. They were trying to hoodwink the entire investment community, and they would have made massive, massive profits and fees. So they're, you know, you're supposed to trust your underwriter of whatever it is, insurance or stocks, etc. I don't trust JP Morgan or any of those affiliated banksters.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So what's new about the Fed? I mean, are we any closer to ending this massive criminal conspiracy called the Federal Reserve and the central banking systems?
So I really started getting active kind of as a more in my research 10 years ago, and I got my on radio and writing maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But compared to where we were 10 years ago, yes, I really think we are closer. But that's like saying you're on mile one of a 26.2-mile marathon. Like, we're way further than we were. A mile's a decent distance, but we got a long way to go. But a lot more people know what the Fed is. A lot more people are pissed about it. Now, the thing is, you know, Trump's a double-edged sword where people are learning about it, and you know, Trump fans or Trump supporters are, oh, the Fed's evil, they're corrupt, they're going against Trump. But that's kind of like not the root of the problem, so it's distracting to some degree. But I certainly think that a lot more people at least know what the Federal Reserve is and have a negative feeling towards it. So that's a start.
Right. And I think people are starting to wake up. You know, you used to ask the question on the street, you know, is the Federal Reserve part of the federal government? And 9 out of 10 of people would say yes. That has turned around. So people are now aware. You know, if Trump does get reelected, you know, there was a great article in Forbes not too long ago, how Trump could fire Powell and rebuild the Fed. I mean, because there's a common misperception that says and even among Fed experts, is that presidents can't fire the chair and the board of governors once they take office. But that's not entirely true. In fact, Trump, if he wanted to do something, he could do something immediately. And I would love to see him do that in the second term and start over. I mean, he wants to drain the swamp. I mean, that's where he starts.
I know, right? It's right there on Constitution Avenue. I always thought it was ironic that the Federal Reserve building, the Eccles building, is right there on Constitution Avenue in D.C. Regardless, I don't think he'll pull that nuclear option. You know, he'll get Kennedy'd before he gets that far, is my opinion.
Right.
But it has to be drastic. We can't rearrange deck chairs on the Titanic, as the tired saying goes. We need to scuttle the ship and start from scratch, essentially.
Yeah, there's a phrase in Section 10 of the Charter for the Federal Reserve. It says, thereafter, each member shall hold office for a term of 14 years from the expiration of the term of his predecessor, unless sooner removed for cause by the president. And Trump could certainly do that. And like he would be Kennedy'd, Breitbart'd, suicided. Who knows what they would do to him? Because the banksters control everything, Ben. It's just crazy.
Absolutely, they're not gonna let that fly. So, real quick, another piece of news though on the Fed. I don't think I talked about this last month, even though it had taken place it was mid to late September, and I was on early October. Repurchase agreements. Long story short, everybody knows the Fed went through some major quote unquote emergency operations after the 2008-2009 crisis. Guess what? They said they were going to raise interest rates back to a normal level. They said they were going to reduce their balance sheet, pretty much get their fingers out of the pie, they said. After about 18 months, though, they totally have reversed course. They're adding to their balance sheet. They're lending $100 billion a night. Now they're getting repaid the next day, allegedly. But there's still $100 billion of this repurchase agreement, liquidity injections. They're falling down the slope, if it makes sense. Like, they're like, I always say it's like Wile E. Coyote Wile E. Coyote when he's chasing Roadrunner or whatever, right? And he goes off the cliff and then he keeps running on thin air until he looks down and then it's a straight down from there. I feel like we're kind of getting to that point. Not to say that the banksters don't have a couple other tricks up their sleeves, which they do, but they're running low on gas here.
I love the little cloud when he hits the ground all the time.
Boom. Good old Wile E. Coyote. We millennials still watch Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies, I swear.
Some of my favorites, man. The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour back in the day on Saturday mornings. That was what we – now I'm doing radio on Saturday mornings. I am watching cartoons. Well, when Liam is around, certainly. But
There you go.
Yeah, we got Liam has some news. He's been struggling with some enlarged tonsils. He's going in for a tonsillectomy on November 12th. I would ask prayers for that. That's going to be hard on the little man.
Absolutely, absolutely. But he's so darn strong, and that's something I've been watching. I'm really proud to see him grow up kind of on social media, at least, if you know what I mean. But he'll be okay. He'll be okay, but definitely some prayers for him.
And Sue's coming back, man. I'm looking forward to us all reuniting over on Sue, the social network. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Do you know what date? Like, I haven't really looked into it.
Well, Michael Crow said on Facebook this morning it's going to be within a week or something like that, and they're going to be live.
Really? Okay. I'm in. Yeah. I'm writing a note right now.
Yeah, we're gonna get Hal and Michael Crow, Sitting Bull, aka you and me, and the rest of the old Sioux gang back together. It's gonna be a lot of fun. All right, we're just about out of time here. Ben, why don't you go ahead and give out your websites again so everybody can find you?
Absolutely. Thanks, Sean. blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Broadcasting Network. Also, wherever you find podcasts, iTunes or a little podcast app on Android or wherever. Just search Patriot Broadcasting Network. You'll get all our material right there.
Sounds great, Ben. Thanks for joining us again today. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show on Saturdays, the first Saturday of every month. Tune in for some bling bling with Ben Cochran, the Breaker of Banksters. Coming up next, we got Mike from On Point Preparedness. We're going to talk Mandela Effect and the Illuminati in the music industry. Stay tuned, everybody.